Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Matt Moore, friend of the show, friend of myself. And I'm interested in where you're sitting right now. We are now about halfway through the bubble, around there, so the bubble playoffs. Has this lived up to your expectations? Everything about it, it's obviously super weird, but all things considered, are you okay with the basketball and the entire setting thus far?
Well, first of all, you asked me where am I sitting, and Anthony, I don't know if you know this, but there's a pandemic, so I'm sitting in the same place I've been sitting for the last 5 months. So that just right off the bat, haven't really left at all. It's been better than I thought. I thought that it would be really messy. I thought it'd be really ugly. And the second round has been really tough and competitive and very defensive oriented and messy and marred by reviews and terrible officiating every single night. But the games have really been competitive and tough, and the guys have brought a real competitive spirit. And they channeled, I think, a lot of their frustrations about not being able to contribute to the protests for Black Lives Matter and against police brutality. And they've channeled, I think, a lot of that energy and just being stuck in the hotel room. And like, they've channeled that into the game because that's all they have. Like, they've been pretty transparent about there's not a lot to do. And so that's where they commit themselves. And I think that's why everything feels like these are really competitive. Teams are just fighting and clawing, and you can't really kick anybody off the ladder. All of the second round series have been really close and could have gone either way in just about every game, except for game one and Nuggets Clippers. All of these games were winnable for one side or the other. So overall, I think it's been much better than I was expecting. I'm not surprised that the ratings are down, just because I think everything is really messed up in general right now. That's an understatement of the year in 2020. But I think generally speaking, everything has been pretty good. I hope that they get through another month. I keep telling myself, like, don't be all excited and don't congratulate the league, because they got to get through another month of this. But it looks like the process has worked, and that I do think that this needs to be a lesson going forward about how much the NBA puts into its thought process. This is not when people thought that this was a ridiculous idea and like, this is never going to work. And I was like, if it wasn't going to work, they wouldn't try it. Mm-hmm. The NBA has too many lawyers in its room for them not to commit to doing the right thing and getting the right process for going forward. But overall, it's been great to have basketball.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point about the league and the process and all of those things, because, we've seen what poor process looks like with how things went early on in the MLB bubble, how things are going with how things might go when the NFL returns and you have teams welcoming even lower percentages of fans into their arenas. I kind of look at how the NBA has done this, and I don't want to sound like I am kissing the league's ass or anything like this, but given the undertaking that this was, and given, like, not just practically speaking and logistically speaking, getting this thing done and pulling it off the way that they did, but they also had to negotiate with the players on everything that is involved with playing in a bubble. And, getting all of that done, and, even the walkout that the players staged, like, even that was something I thought the league was smart in, just taking a step back, letting the players have their moment, giving them their space, and then eventually getting right back to work.
Well, I mean, I'll just, from my perspective, when you have that much emotion and guys, but this is one of the things that I thought about a lot during that whole sequence. These are the most competitive people on the planet. Mm-hmm. There are some basketball players in the NBA that are not competitive. That there are. There's not a lot. There's some. There's some guys who just don't love basketball. They're there because they're tall and they're talented, and they get them a good paycheck, like a great paycheck. But in general, the only way that you make it to the NBA is if you are one of the most competitive human beings on the planet. You want to win at everything. Jordan was the extreme of this, but most guys are super competitive. They hate to lose, and they want to fight in the game. They want to compete. And for a group of those individuals with as much on the line as they have, on top of that, to go, I'm not playing. I think the league understood, like, if we try and you know, take a hard line here and say like, we're fining you, or this is like a violation. Like if they tried to do anything, one, the PR was going to be just a disaster. It was going to be catastrophic. And then two, you know, you risk losing the players entirely. And it's like, if you want to make your money, you need the players. And that to me is one of the best things that Silver did throughout this entire process, is it wasn't like, we're going back to work. And the players are like, wait, what now? And the league's like, yeah, come on. We don't really care what you're saying. Figure your own stuff out. Here we go. This is the protocol. They were like, hey, we think we can go back to work. This is our plan. How do you feel about it? And along the way, they've included the players as a partner in this. And the players still don't feel like they're partners. And that's understandable for a whole number of reasons. But I do think that it was necessary for the league to take that approach during the protest. But it was also, they handled it better because they didn't just say, okay, like they got the board of governors together and was like, look, we're going to have to like actually commit to this or we're going to lose the players. And, you know, if you go to their wallets, all of a sudden you have the owner's attention.
Yeah, well, I mean, but all of that is to say that, like, there's, if that exact thing went down in the NFL, something tells me that like, Jerry Jones wouldn't have been as empathetic,
right?
Or, you know, to the entire situation.
I mean, look, and that's one of the things is, like, I've said this, is, like, when the NBA players were striking, because that's what it was a strike, you know, the people that they need to alter, that they need to force change from. And this is the reality, is you're not going to gently convert these people. It's going to have to be like, no, in order to get what you want, you have to give us what we want.
Mm-hmm.
The only real way to reach those people is with football. And that's, you know, when the players were missing practice, that you could tell there was some shifting of sentiments once the, and you know, we'll see what happens, because these incidents continue to occur every single damn day, because we just are sick. We're just sick with racism and police brutality. And until, you know, and that may lead to, like, I'll just say this. The first time the NFL game is canceled because the players walk off the field, that's a whole other, pardon my language, but that's a whole other ball of shit right there. Like, that's a whole other deal.
Yeah, lit on fire. Dipped in gas and
that's a way bigger, and like that's before we get into the one person that lives in the one house with the one color and his whole nonsense.
I want to quickly segue and awkwardly segue over to the basketball that we've seen here.
Talk hoops after we talk about police brutality. Let's go.
Yeah,
God, this is weird here.
I know. I apologize for the crude segue there. But
there's no way to do it, right?
There's no way. Like, you just got to dive in. You got to rip off the Band-Aid and hope you don't sound too moronic. But I think one of the biggest storylines we've seen in recent memory hit when Milwaukee made yet another early exit from the playoffs, this time at the hand of the Miami Heat, and it went down in a lot of the same ways that it went down last year, and a lot of the same criticisms that we saw, that we heard of Bud, and the way that that team plays, and even Giannis to a certain extent, you know, resurfaced all over again, and now the conversation shifts to what does this mean for Giannis's future. But I actually want to go in a different direction, because I think we have the entire offseason to talk about that, and we're going to throw it a break. And on the other side of it, I want to talk about the regular season and a thing that has really struck me this year more than other years in terms of its usefulness. So let's hang tight, play a couple bills, and when we come back, we'll talk about that. Today's show is brought to you in part by DoorDash. Download the DoorDash app and then enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and you'll save $5 off your first delivery over $15 or more. And you'll pay no delivery fees on that delivery. And you'll get some of the best food that is in your area brought right to your door. You don't even have to see anybody. They have contactless deliveries that are super safe. They just drop off the door. You could even, in a note, say, hey, like for us, for example, because we have Avery and we don't know when she's going to be napping, we have like a general request. Hey, can you not ring the doorbell? And drivers are very good about not ringing the doorbell. So if you want access to your favorite restaurants, whether they're chains, mom and pop shops, fast food restaurants, whatever, and you don't want to go outside or you don't want to put people at risk by going and sitting in those restaurants, hop on DoorDash and then enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA. And when you do so, you'll save $5 off your first delivery for $15 or more, and you won't pay any deliveries. One more time, that is LOCKEDONNBA for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. Today's show is also brought to you in part by Rock Auto. Head on over to rockauto.com and find every part you could possibly imagine. I've actually, on days where I'm super bored and I just don't feel like paying attention to my daughter for a little while, I'll just hop on rockauto.com and just look up, all right, give me the steering column for a Model T or something like that, and just see how ridiculous the request can get. And I am utterly shocked at how often these parts that I'm entering in to be funny, like the point of it is to be funny and to entertain myself for a little while and turn my brain off. I'm shocked at how often these parts come back. So go over to rockauto.com where you'll find every part you could possibly need at reliably low prices, no matter what background you are working on your car with. And then write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. That is rockauto.com. So you hear it every year, right? And it's not just basketball, right? Hockey, good Lord, they play 82 games too. Baseball, good God, they play 162 games. Basketball, 82 games. I don't even know how many games they play in the MLS. And like the what it all kind of comes down to is like that regular season feels really meaningless. But I really feel like I understand why a casual fan would think the regular season in the NBA is meaningless. You have all the load management stuff. You have, you know, just nights that players will take off even while they're on the court. I could see why a casual fan would look at that and say, do we even need 82 games? And to a certain extent, I would even agree. But what I think we've learned here with Milwaukee, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, is those teams that use the 82 games just to rack up wins or just to rack up stats are going about it wrong. Like what you need to do over the course of 82 games is obviously hone your 102 mile an hour fastball, but hopefully over the course of it too, you develop a changeup, you throw a curveball, you learn a slider so that, you know, when the time comes and when you get into the postseason and a team sits on that 102 mile an hour fastball, you're able to adjust. And I think the teams that we've seen over the course of this year and the teams that are going to be moving on here looked at this regular season as opportunities to do just that. As frustrating as it was to see Anthony Davis posted up when there are so many more interesting ways for the Lakers to go about scoring a basketball, there was value in doing some of that because those are the kind of shots that he's probably going to get. And you may as well have really worked on it over the course of the season. Whereas you look at Milwaukee, and they ran up the score in much of the same way, night in, night out. But then when you couldn't run up the score that same way or win games in that same way, they really struggled. So what do you think about the theory that, hey, sure, in the traditional sense, regular season games night to night don't really matter that much. But if you're paying close attention, what you got to be watching for are these teams developing their various, you know, counterpunches to the fights that the slugfest that these series turn out to be.
So there's a concept in business management called good to great. And I don't tend to gravitate towards these ideas much. I think some of them are interesting and some of them are crap, but this one actually got quite a bit of push in the 90s. And the idea was that it used to be like, okay, we know what we're good at. Let's try and get better at the things that we're not. And then there was this line of thinking that came along that was like, actually what you want to do is you just want to accentuate the good things that you do and make them great. Because every organization is going to have weaknesses.
Yep.
And ultimately, like, that's reflective of what we saw, I think, with Milwaukee, where they took what they were good at and they made it great and they made it greater. And I should note, there were things that they did this year that gave life to the idea that maybe this wouldn't work out this way. Full disclosure, I identified back in January in a column on the Heat, I was like, their defense is probably going to go back down, but look out for them in the playoffs. They match up really well with Milwaukee. And then I wrote about Milwaukee before the bubble restarted, before the bubble started. And I said, Milwaukee's probably going to do really well in the receiving games. They didn't. But I was like, there's a very good chance they lose to the Heat in the second round. And then before the Heat series, I wrote, the Heat are going to win in six. And I gave them too much credit. They won in five. So like, this is not, I wasn't like blindsided. Like, I saw this coming. A lot of it simply comes down to, in the NFL, you have a week and you can game plan how you play to what they do. And in the NBA, I have seen this time and time again. I ask coaches, like, how are you going to like counter this game? And it's like, you know, honestly, we're just going to go out there and do what we do, because they can't. You can't tailor your game plan in a regular season matchup to the opponent. You can't. Right. Because you have to get back on the plane and go and then do it again in 48 hours.
Yeah, and like sometimes less.
And that's, yeah, sometimes 24 hours later. And so they're just like, we're going to do what we do and we're going to get through it. The Bucks threw in stuff like they ran significantly more screen and roll with Giannis as the screener this year. But the big thing was that Brooke was so good defensively that they never ran Giannis at five and switch everything. They never went that route.
It's crazy.
And I don't necessarily, and part of it is, if you're winning those games, why would you switch it up from something that's working if you're like, everything that we do works? And it did during the regular season. You can point to the Miami games and go, yeah, but they lost those. That's three games across this entire thing. And you have faith that you can make small adjustments and figure it out. I wrote this huge thing on Action Network about adjustments. And one of the things I pointed out was, everything that Budenholzer does comes straight from Popovich. And nobody likes this idea. And this is like, I'm feeding candy to Lakers fans right now by talking about how Greg Popovich
I can't lie.
Yeah, as people think. But like, I think Pop is the greatest coach of all time, any sport. But for me, I also have covered enough Spurs series to see like, why doesn't he, like, it'll be game three and I'm like, why is he still starting this dude? Or why is he still running this guy in the rotation? And he would get asked about it, and there's a litany of quotes through the years where Popovich basically says, I think playoff adjustments in general are overrated. You make small tweaks, but the biggest thing is you just got to do what you do best, and you have to do it better. And that line of thinking is exactly what Bud takes in. The problem is that with where the league is at, especially, and this is a big key, with three-point variance, that's where this flips, okay? If shooting percentages and the kind of shooters were normalized to the last 30 years, the Bucks are fine because they generate enough threes and their offense is good enough and Giannis is dominant and they defend well enough. But in the playoffs, what happens is they specifically target key shooters. If you notice in that series versus the Heat, Duncan Robinson didn't do hardly anything. And I knew he wouldn't, because when I went back and watched the matchups, they target specific shooters and go, that's their shooter. Don't let him shoot threes. Mm-hmm. But the other guys, guess who the other guy was? Jay Crowder. And in the regular season, Jay Crowder shot 29% with the Memphis Grizzlies, and he shot something like 57% in that series versus the Bucks. That's how it goes. There's also like an element of this where, yes, it's Bud, and it's honestly Giannis. Like, Giannis needs a short jumper. Just does. He needs more counters. Like, phenomenal player, completely worthy of the MVP, should have won it twice, most dominant player in the sport, needs a freaking jumper. He needs a counter to them layering three dudes on him, so that he can just pull up and punish them for preparing for him at the rim. But for all that, the other thing I keep coming back to, Anthony, is honestly this. This is just how it goes. Like, the Bucks are the type of team that have this awesome team and lose and the star leaves. And other teams in other places, in other states, say on the West Coast, are teams that they can have all these issues and weaknesses and problems and they wind up winning anyway, and then stars come and join them or whatever. Like, this is just how the NBA goes.
Matt, like, you just said a second ago that there are things that Bud needs to, like, adjust to come postseason.
Oh, yeah, no. It's both, though, Anthony. Like, just to be perfectly clear, like, I think it would be totally fine if the Bucks fired Mike Budenholzer tomorrow. And I think Bud's an incredibly good coach. I think he was great in Atlanta. I think he was in Milwaukee. I loved watching those teams. His reluctance to play them more minutes, not switching, not playing Giannis at five – his stubbornness literally cost them the series.
Might have cost him the championship.
And that's fine. Everybody fine. No, but everybody could just blame Bud and say he sucks and that's why. That's fine.
No,
that's okay.
I think it's a litany of things though, right? Like, I think it's a combination of Bud's reluctance to change. Giannis, I thought, focused too much on developing a three-point shot and not enough time, like, building the game, you know, filling the gap between finishing at the rim and taking those threes. Like, there's any number of things here. And hopefully, and it kind of sounds like, now, this is always kind of what superstars say after they lose, like, right after they lose. They say all the right things. And then they go and they sit on the shortcomings of the organization for a few months. And then you come back and you start to hear the whispers of, does he want to go here? Does he want to go here? Is he asking for a trade? Is he going to sign the Supermax? Blah, 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 blah. There's any number of things to blame here with Milwaukee. And I think the thing that you and I have gone back and forth the most on is the Malcolm Brogdon thing. And that's where, and now granted, I do not pay nearly as much attention to the Milwaukee Bucks as I do the Lakers. But had the Lakers, back when they had Derek Fisher, let him go, basically, like when they absolutely needed a player like Derek Fisher, or maybe a better example is like a Robert Horry, right? At the pinnacle of you know, the three-peat, had they just let Robert Horry walk and said, no, screw it, I know you provide spacing, but we can't afford the luxury tax here. Like, that would have bothered me. It really bothers me when a team lets arguably its third best player walk out the door because they don't want to fit a luxury tax bill for a championship contender. That just inherently bothers me. And I know some of these decisions are harder for small market teams than they are for the Lakers, than they are for the Knicks, than they are for bigger market teams. But at the end of the day, your goal here should be to win a championship, not make a buck. No pun intended, but like, you know, I just think when you look at that decision and the things that they were missing in that series, like, I'm sorry, I just don't have much sympathy for the Bucks organization when they throw their hands up and say, well, what else could we have done? It's staring right at you right there, what you could have done.
Well, okay, one. I don't mind if you blame the organization. I think it just sucks for the fans. Like, that's my biggest thing.
It does. Like, it does. You and I agree.
You know, and everyone just, everyone on NBA online, Twitter, internet, et cetera, it's just like, and they let him go and they're terrible and they deserve this. And it's just like, if you're a Bucks fan, how do you feel about that? Like, you don't have any control over that. And you can be like,
I'd be as loud as the organization.
Can be mad.
You're asking me.
Mad. Like, this is the reality of like how it is for all these small markets. And the big market, it's like, well, the big markets don't do this because they don't have to, because they can fit whatever bill and they still pull the same profit. And like, that's an underrated part of this that gets lost, is that if you're a small market owner, you're in competition with other guys, you're in competition for the title, but you're also competition for the money. And you can't stand it that the Lakers can do whatever they want and pull this huge profit. And you're like, I want the profit too. Like, you're competing with the, and that's the problem. And if you want to
buy the Lakers.
If you want to say, if you own a smart market team, you're going to have to pay the luxury tax to win the title. Like, that's fine. I'm good with that. Because this is the thing. I don't want to sit here and, like, defend them being cheap. I don't think Brogdon swings the series, by the way. Like,
I think he certainly helps.
Does he swing the series?
This is the thing. It depends.
You can say he helps.
Does Bud play him 20 minutes a night? Like, if he
helps and he gets him to a game six, does that make the difference?
I do think he swings the series.
You think they win if they have Malcolm Brogdon?
I do, because he's better than George Hill, who
did not shoot well from three this year. Like,
because he wasn't playing with Giannis again.
Like, okay.
Like the context, because like, I keep on seeing that as a response when Brogdon comes
up. They lost
up,
with like, him last year.
Well, look
year,
at what he did out there, and look at what he did in Indiana. It's like, well, yeah, he played for a lesser team.
But they lost last year with him, Anthony.
He was hurt.
Ugh, okay. Like, I get it. I think Malcolm Brogdon is a phenomenal player. Like, I won.
To me, he's like my ideal point guard in this era of basketball.
Yeah, he's incredible. And they absolutely, like, if you look at it, like, if you go back, like, they should have traded Bledsoe or let him walk. Mm-hmm. And they should have kept Brogdon. But Bled was having an all-NBA season for the number one team in the league as a starting point guard. And, like, silly them. And if you want to just say, like, the owner, like, I'm with you on the idea of the only real way to do this is just to be like, we're going to take a loss. We're going to have a title and that's awesome, but this has to be a toy because it used to be toys and now they're money-making ventures. The problem is that there is an inequity between certain markets that get to have both. And the rail, and like, if you just want to be like, that's tough. It's your fault for living in a scummy city like Milwaukee, which I like Milwaukee quite a bit. I think it's a cool city. Mm. Then that's fine. I think
the Bucks, also, I have never said anything like that.
but like, if you want to say that, then that's fine. Like, it's flyover country.
It's not
if you
fine.
Can be there, if you want to be there, if you want to win a title there, you're going to have to just accept that you're going to have to take a huge loss. My thing is, I don't know. Like, and you can rightly point out that these are billionaires and they can afford it. And I'm with you on that. Like, yeah, like they should. The problem I think I run into, Anthony, is not whether they should or not. It's about, I try very hard. I came to a Zen whole thing during this whole messed up completely effed year, which is like, it's a concept from Nietzsche, which is like amor fati, love fate. Okay. And the idea is, it's not nihilism. It's acceptance of like, this is the reality. And I try and bring that more because it makes me more at peace. And this is part of like when I ruminate on these basketball issues instead of the horrible worldwide issues that we're dealing right. with all the time. I get focused a lot on that, which is like, you can say like, but these small markets should just pay the luxury tax. Yeah, but they don't. We don't know why. We don't know what the books say. We don't know if it's the difference between
that's the
them having like a catastrophic loss. Or no, they just didn't make as much money. We don't know.
But that's a huge part of the issue here. Like that's a huge part of the equation.
I agree.
And it's something that like every lockout we hear about how all these spoiled players making millions to play a child's game. They should just make their money and be happy that they get that opportunity.
See, I disagree.
All the while, we don't know how much these owners make in revenue.
Yeah.
You have what, 30 owners splitting the same BRI as what is it, 200 and 100, 150 players? Like that doesn't the math there doesn't quite add up.
Yeah. No, I agree. Like the most likely scenario here is just that all of the owners care about money and the big market teams don't have to worry about it. And that's why they win. Like that's it, because they all care about money too much. If the big market teams had to decide between a loss and a profit for keeping those players, they wouldn't make the decisions that they do, but they don't have to make those decisions. Like that's part of my contention here is like the big market owners aren't better. Like, you know, certain teams with multi-billion dollar organizations may have taken a loan from the government during the PPP thing, like just theoretically, like they all clearly care about the money. The money matters to all of them, right? And it doesn't matter to us because like we're fans and no one gets excited because no one's going to celebrate in their living room because Clay Bennett pocketed an extra 22 mil or, you know, or Lazary pocketed an extra 35 million. Like, we're not going to do that. We don't care about that. You want the title. You want the stories. You want the sport. So like, I am with you on all of this. I think that the issue is that it's frustrating to me that they all care about the same things and that certain teams just don't have to worry about it.
I see the point that you're making, but again, the option for Lazary, if he wants to have his cake and eat it too, is to buy into one of those big markets where you can make that choice for yourself.
Maybe when Giannis leaves, this will send a message to the other owners after, you know, Katie and all these others. But I also, here's the thing though, is like, I think they could do everything right. And it could still not work for whatever reason, but, or just hot shooting or whatever. And then Giannis might still leave because the players all have personal preferences, which they get to have about their lives. Like they get to have these choices and they get to have things that they prefer. But that's one of the difficulties is outside of Dame, you just don't find dudes that are like, no, I want to be king of this city. Like this is my franchise. I want a statue out front.
You know? Doesn't Giannis feel like that kind of player though? Like he's always felt like that kind of player.
He does, but I wrote about this today over at Action. I think the other thing is that he is, if you ask me who the most competitive players of the last 25 years were, number one would be Kobe Bryant. Number two would be Chris Paul. And number three would be Giannis. I think those are the three most competitive people that I've seen in the league. Giannis is like he wants to win. And I think that matters to him. And that's the sentiment I get from everybody around the league too, is like, that's what matters to him. Which, and so I think
the Brogdon thing even more frustrating, doesn't it?
Sure.
If
they didn't pay for this one backup point guard. And so he's going to leave. That's fine. He was a really good player. They should have done everything possible. If your whole thing is you have to do everything possible to keep Giannis, and they didn't do everything possible. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're right. Okay. So he's probably going to leave and go somewhere where they will do that, like Miami or the Lakers or the Warriors or possibly Toronto, depending on how strong the Masai tie is. Like, just because those teams also provide a better chance to win. It's not just the lifestyle. It's they provide a better chance to win because of all these things we've talked about.
Well, I don't see him going to the Lakers because he's so competitive.
What if AD decides? I'm just kidding. Wouldn't it be wild though if AD was like, I didn't really like it.
it's too warm here. Rated. Yeah. Well, then if that lines up to get the Lakers Giannis, then it would make for a really interesting storyline. I think AD would immediately become one of the most hated players in the league, though. Like, just because Lakers fans are really loud on that stuff.
Yeah, because everybody already hates him for going to the Lakers, then Lakers fans would hate him for
and then Lakers fans would hate him too. All right.
Yeah, which is why he should demand a trade to the Boston Celtics. It's like the only way to this.
Let's take a second here. When we come back, we got to talk about the Lakers, the basketball we've seen thus far. The Clippers just took, what is it, a 3-1 lead over Denver last night, by the time you guys are listening to this. The Lakers are going to be looking to do the same thing tonight. So we will talk about that, how that series looks, if that is how things play out, and just see where all this goes. All right, since this became a borderline religious debate on Lakers Twitter, what side of the debate did you fall on between should the Lakers try to play big against Houston or try to go small and try to outsmall Houston?
I think it's mostly that they need to mix it up. I thought that the stuff from I'm sorry for not knowing how to pronounce his name, but the work done on the big lineups was very good. Was very good over
Kranjus.
Yeah, Kranjus. I thought that the work over at that site was excellent and compelling. And like, I get it. I think a lot of it is just when I've gone back and watched, the shots that AD has hit over PJ Tucker are acceptable for Houston because they're fadeaway, contested, difficult shots that AD can absolutely hit because he's Anthony Davis. But that's more of like what you're willing to live with rather than the lob and everything else. Like, I think PJ Tucker's done really well in this series, and then the numbers bear that out. Like, that's been like the Rockets in the series are plus 13.1 with Tucker on the court and minus 42.3 with him on the bench.
Yeah.
Like, in net rating, like, that's absurd. And that's with Tucker on the court, the Rockets have a 104.3 defensive rating, which is where they got to win this series. I think you can mix it up. I don't think that going small is a bad idea, but I think it's a lot riskier. So the ceiling for going small is much higher, but the floor is much lower, because if AD's not hitting his threes and his jump shots, which isn't always the most reliable part of his game, then that causes variance. And anytime that you're in a variance contest with Houston, that's bad, because the Houston as a favorite is vulnerable because variance can work against them. They're good as an underdog because the variance can work for them. But I think the Lakers have done a really good job of getting up threes and containing the number of Rockets threes in the series. I think the defensive game plan has been very good. I think Jeff Green's been an abject disaster in his minutes. Like, they honestly, like, the Rockets needed Isaiah Hartenstein, which sounds insane, but just having another big to plug in there that's not Jeff Green would do them a lot of good with where this series is at. Dwight, the numbers has not played. Like, they don't even need Dwight. It's just JaVale and Markieff Morris, I think, has been a big swing in this series. I think they're getting – the biggest thing is that the Lakers have gotten the swing players. That's been the big thing. I'm writing about this on Action for Tomorrow about I'm calling them the weights, which is, imagine a scale, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a weighted scale and you stack up coaching advantages and matchups and talent and all these things. And in the Clippers Nuggets series, I think the Nuggets actually have a pretty big matchup advantage because they can't stop Jokic. They can't do anything against the Nuggets' best player. But the Clippers have so much more talent, it weighs it down. Like the Clippers, I don't think are a better overall team than Denver. They're just extremely more talented. And with the Lakers, I actually think kind of the opposite has largely been true, where I think that the talent on both teams is not even because you have LeBron James and that's always an advantage. But the Rockets like have quite a bit of talent and I like their top like seven guys. Those are pretty good players. But the problem is like one, Westbrook's just a shell of himself. He's back to who he was at the first beginning of the year. And then two, the Lakers have gotten Rajon Rondo and Markieff Morris to play great. And if those two guys are playing great, that's too much for the Rockets structure to hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Especially about the weights aspect. I like the way that you put that, where it's basically like the thing could swing either way heading into it, but eventually you stack so many weights up on one side of it and the thing just breaks and it slams down to one side. And that's generally how the Lakers have looked when the math isn't so, you know, slanted in favor of Houston, when they can run guys off the 3-point line and when they can force misses and get out into transition and generate more and quicker possessions for themselves compared to what Houston is trying to do on offense. Like that's when the Lakers have just looked absolutely dominating. And like the thing that I'm kind of coming back to, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this because I know that I understand my biases, but like Pete and I walked away from game two saying, okay, what adjustment does Houston have here? Like I, you know, especially if Danwell House might actually miss the rest of the series because he seems to have pulled a really bonehead move. And so, you know, from where I'm sitting, I'm looking at the series and I'm saying, I just don't know. Like the Lakers have done the thing that wasn't supposed to be able to do to Houston, which is limit the number of threes that they're taking. And I just don't really know what the adjustment for Houston is other than just like force them up from deeper, maybe. I don't really know. So from, you know, from your point of view here, watching the series from as not a Laker fan, are you seeing the same thing or do you see some things that Houston could maybe do to swing this series back in their favor?
I don't think that there are tactical adjustments they can make. And this is one of the problems with D'Antoni, as much as I love the man. And I do, mm-hmm. I just have always thought he was brilliant. Loved him in Phoenix the whole way.
Even in LA?
That didn't happen. That situation is proof that you should not make decisions about your career when you're on pain pills recovering from surgery. That was my big takeaway from that thing. Cause that never made sense. Why would you possibly go do that? But when you play as short of rotation as he does, and he's been a little bit deeper in this series than he normally is, but even then, like Austin Rivers, 33 minutes, Ben McLemore's played 17, like they're pretty much playing seven dudes. You don't have a lot of tactical advantage. And because they went to the small ball thing, they traded Capella to go all in and commit. And the problem is that you don't have an alternative. Like they don't have the ability. The Lakers can say we can play big or small, depending on what you throw on the floor. And we can play big or less big, I guess is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
And the Rockets can say like, we're only going to play small and we're just going to beat you with volume. Now, I think it's likely that they probably get another game just based off of variance, right? Like there's probably, especially with this Lakers offense, like you probably know like a Lakers clunker's coming, like just a night where just their offense looks like garbage. Game one. Yeah. Like another game where they look like that. Their half court offense just isn't very good because it doesn't have a whole lot of weaponry beyond James and Davis. Like Morris helps, but I don't trust Morris, and Rondo is Rondo. But again, that's like, especially as Rondo gets older, I think that's harder to kind of think that there's going to be sustainable stuff there. And I haven't liked the way that Kuzma's played in particular. There've been moments, but overall I haven't like loved the way that he's played, and they don't have like a third guy to carry him. So if they have a game where just the shots aren't falling and it's just tough. I think the Rockets can take one more, but I think Lakers in six is the most likely outcome here. And I think, you know, I think Houston had opportunities, and this is kind of like the Nuggets. The Nuggets could have won game three. They could have, yeah. They could have won game three and they didn't. And that was the one they needed to get. You have to get the, when you're in the kind of situation that the Rockets are in with a team that's this talented and is this good defensively, you have to tick off and say, like, you're going to lose X number of games, which means you have to win these coin flip games or you're not going to have a chance, because you'll get like one where you just outplay them. But if you don't get the coin flip games, it doesn't matter. And that's where Denver's at. And I think that's where Houston's going to end up too, is that they haven't been able to cash in. They've had two opportunities here where they've had a situation where they could have won that game. And then the Lakers just ran past them and outpaced them. And blowing those opportunities, I think, is big. So I think the Rockets probably take one more, but I think we're going to get Lakers Clippers in the Western Conference Finals.
If that's if that is where we're heading, having seen up close what the Clippers can do, and then, you know, having watched, I would imagine, plenty of Lakers as well, how do you see that series going based on, you know, heading into the postseason? I think that's what most people envisioned in the first place or pictured in the first place. But now, having seen both the Clippers and Lakers play in this postseason setting, how do you see that matchup playing out, you know, if that is where this is going?
I think it's fascinating. I've gone back and forth on it, and I really like the Lakers concept better. Like, I like them as a team. The Lakers feel like a real team. They have, like, good chemistry, and they play together. They have an identity. And the Clippers are just, like, a bunch of dudes who are really talented. And that's not like a knock on them, but that's just like who they are.
Yeah.
You know, they're led by Kawhi. That's like not going to instill a lot of executives culture. Have said this to me that there's this belief that like your team embodies your best player, and Kawhi is their best player. And I don't know that there's anything there for them to embody, right? Just like lethal efficiency with an awkward laugh. So the problem,
the same thing has actually been said about the show, really.
Right, sure. The problem I think for the Lakers is just, I think that the Lakers will do a better job than the Mavericks and Nuggets have done in targeting their weak spots. Like, it's been frustrating to me to watch the Nuggets not target Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Like, Lou Williams has been a positive in the series, and that just can't happen. You have to be able to just isolate and figure out how to target down Lou Williams. And I think the Lakers will probably do a better job of that. And so, like, it'll be a close, it should be a great series. I think one of the problems is that the entire Lakers defense is designed to make things tough on you, and you're going to have to hit tough shots. And that team's really good at hitting tough shots. Like, they have Kawhi, PG, and Marcus Morris. And those three dudes can just make tough shots. And Marcus Morris is a weight. And if he has a really good game, then that can swing things. Montrezl Harrell, they're covering for him really well with defensive help. They have the ability to play big. They have bodies. They can do a lot. Like, Davis will eat, but I think the Clippers, I would have it like slight, I would lean slightly Clippers, but if you told me the Lakers won in six, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think the Lakers are a phenomenal team. I think they are, because of their team identity and how they play defense and the contributions that they get from everybody, like Caruso and your favorite Rajon Rondo. And like, there's nights when Kuzma is a genuine positive, and like, they just have nights where everybody contributes and gives a little bit, and that's enough. And I like their, and LeBron's been, I think, a great leader throughout all this. So I think they definitely have a shot to win, but I do think that the Lakers should probably be underdogs in that series, which is crazy that a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis should be an underdog to anybody. But the Clippers just have so much freaking talent and have the ability. One of the problems is that the Clippers can win these knockdown, drag out, ugly games, and they can win shootouts. And the Lakers, I don't think, can win a shootout.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I legitimately have no idea how that series goes. Flip a coin. And I think the Clippers, like, I think if they were to play 100 times, the Clippers would win 50 and the Lakers win 50. I just think it's a really good matchup. And like you said, both teams can kind of adjust to each other and try to take advantage of different things. But, you know, in trying to take advantage of those things, are they going to give up something else? And, Yeah, I think that's where we're heading. I think the Clippers are going to take care of business against Denver. I'm pretty confident, actually, that the Lakers don't lose again to Houston. And mostly because I don't think the Clippers are going to lose to Denver. And I don't think LeBron wants to play one more game while the Clippers wait for them. So I just I think it's a fascinating series. And then on the other side of the league, you have Heat and whoever comes out of Celtics and Raptors. And it's just the second round has kind of been exactly what I was hoping for here. Would I have preferred to get more games out of Miami and Milwaukee? Yeah, that would have been nice. But overall, I can't really complain about how this thing has all gone. And I think that's a good way to kind of bring this thing full circle and that, could I complain about the referees more? Yeah, they've been pretty brutal night in, night out. But like overall, given the fact that the league has pulled off competitive basketball and the players have actually risen to playoff atmospheres without playoff atmospheres, I think is a success in and of itself. So I don't know, man. I Given the way that 2020 has gone everywhere else, I feel like this has been a pretty significant win for those of us who really care about this league.
Knock on wood. Just knock on every piece of wood ever. Let's just get through the next month. Let's just get through the next month.
Yeah.
And then we can be like, that was good, and wait for like 5 months for the next season to start.
Well, the good news is Dan Wellhouse is probably going home pretty soon. So that limits one more person
who make good. I have my daughter is in pre-K and mm-hmm. they're teaching. They've taught her at her daycare, make green choices, not red choices. And Daniel House made a red choice.
Very, very red. Matches his jersey. Well, thank you very much, Matt. Anything that you're working on for the Action Network?
Yeah. I'm working on a piece on the weights for tomorrow for mm-hmm. Thursday. When you're reading this, should be up. I'll be doing a big thing on Jimmy Butler versus Paul George, which I'm sure Lakers fans will love. I'm also going to work on a thing on Anthony Davis, and there's a thing for me on Bad Anthony Davis coming the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure how that's going to be received. So we'll just wait, be on the lookout for something to make your blood boil.
I can't wait. You went this whole show. I think the vast majority of this time, people have been mostly agreeing with you.
I've been pro Lakers like the whole year. I'm very pro Lakers this year. I'm very pro Lakers.
But it's always
general.
The one thing, dude. Like, you know this. That's why Reddit wanted me fired like for the entire season.
Yeah.
I said the one thing, and then that was it. That was it. I'll never be forgiven. So I you get to join me in that abyss.
It's in the bio. I hate your team.
All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete and I will be back to recap the right after the game tomorrow night or tonight by the time you guys are listening to this. Thank you very much, Matt, for hopping on.
Thanks for having me.